A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and he called it Container Box, which is almost certainly Distrobox. It's one of those tools where the name Confusion actually tells you something about how it spreads. People hear about it from a friend, misremember the name, but remember exactly what it does. And what it does is kind of wild. You can run Arch's AUR on Fedora Silverblue without a Vim. You can test the latest Ubuntu on an immutable distro without rebooting. You can isolate a messy build environment and then just delete it when you're done. The question is, what's actually happening under the hood? And when does it beat Docker, Podman, or a full VM?
What exactly is Distrobox, and why should you care? Let's break it down. Distrobox is a tool created by Luca Di Maio, first released in 2021. And the simplest way to describe it is, it creates rootless Podman or Docker containers, but with your home directory and key host paths mounted in, so the container behaves like a crute with a completely different user land. You get a shell that feels like you're on a different Linux distribution, but all your files are right there, your GUI apps launch, your GPU works, your audio works. It's the container experience redesigned for humans rather than for server workloads.
That phrase, redesigned for humans, that's doing a lot of work. Because I've used raw Docker for development before, and the experience is, well, it's the user experience equivalent of filling out tax forms in a language you don't speak.
Right, and that's the core insight behind Distrobox. Docker and Podman were built for ephemeral, single-process, service-oriented workloads. You spin up a web server, it does one thing, you tear it down. Distrobox was built for persistent, multi-process, interactive workstation environments. It's the difference between a hotel room and an apartment. Docker gives you a hotel room. Distrobox gives you an apartment with your own furniture already in it.
The Airbnb of Linux containers. Someone else's user land, but your stuff is already there.
That's actually not a bad way to put it. So let me get into the mechanics, because this is where it gets elegant. When you create a Distrobox container, it uses Podman or Docker under the hood, but it does something radical. It runs the container with the host's user namespace. That means your user ID inside the container matches your user ID outside. It mounts your entire home directory at /home/your username. It mounts /media/mnt and critically /rnt and critically /run/user/your user ID, which is where Pulse Audio, Pipewire, and the Dbus session socket live. It also mounts /tmp and the X1 or Wayland sockets.
It's not sandboxing you from your own machine. It's sandboxing the machine from your experiments while still giving you access to everything you actually need.
And then it runs a custom init script called Distrobox init inside the container. This sets up the Dbus session, configures systemdf the image supports it, integrates with the host display server, and wires up audio. The result is that you type Distrobox enter my container, and suddenly you're in, say, an Ubuntu shell, but you can run Firefox, and it appears as a window on your host desktop. You can play audio through your host speakers. You can access your USB devices. It feels like magic, but it's just clever mount points and namespace sharing.
The overhead is basically nothing, right? Because it's not virtualizing hardware.
We're talking maybe 50 megabytes of RAM overhead for the container itself versus 1 to 2 gigabytes for a full VM running its own kernel. Startup time is under 2 seconds on modern hardware versus 30 seconds or more for a VM. And you can run hundreds of these containers simultaneously because they all share the same kernel. The only real resource consumption is whatever processes you're actually running inside.
Let's get into the killer use cases, because this is where the why should I care question gets answered. You mentioned running Arch's AUR on Fedora Silverblue.
This might be my favorite use case. Fedora Silverblue is an immutable desktop distro. The core system is read-only, and you're supposed to install applications as flatpaks or in containers. It's great for stability, but if you need something from the Arch user repository, you're apparently out of luck. Except with DistroBox, you just run DistroBox create dash dash name arch dash dash image arch Linux colon latest, then DistroBox enter arch, and now you're in an Arch Linux user land with full access to Pacman and the AUR. You install Yay or Peru, build your AUR packages, and those binaries can access your home directory just like native applications. You can even export desktop files from inside the container to your host application menu.
You get the stability of an immutable base system with the bleeding-edge package availability of Arch. That's the Linux equivalent of having a sensible sedan for your commute, and a sports car in the garage for weekends.
You don't have to rebuild the garage to use either one. Here's another use case that I think matters a lot for people doing AI and machine learning work. Getting CUDA or ROCm toolchains working on immutable distros is historically a nightmare. The drivers need kernel module integration. The libraries need specific paths, and immutable systems resist that kind of deep modification. But with DistroBox, you can create a container based on the official NVIDIA CUDA image, pass through the GPU devices, and suddenly PyTorch or TensorFlow runs with full GPU acceleration inside the container while your host system remains untouched.
How does the GPU pass-through actually work? Because that feels like the part where the abstraction should break.
It works because the container shares the host kernel, and the kernel already has the NVIDIA or AMD drivers loaded. For NVIDIA, you install the NVIDIA Container Toolkit on the host, which was first released in 2019, and DistroBox can use the dash dash additional flags option to pass through dash dash GPS all. It mounts the driver libraries and the slash dev slash NVIDIA devices. For AMD, it's even simpler because the AMD GPU driver is already in the mainline kernel. You just mount slash dev slash dydry and slash dev slash KFD, and the ROCm stack works inside the container. No kernel modules to load, no host modification beyond having the drivers installed.
The container isn't running the GPU. It's borrowing the hosts already, running GPU driver through device node pass-through. The container thinks it has a GPU because the kernel says, here, you can talk to this device.
And the same principle applies to USB devices, webcams, and audio. You mount slash dev slash bus slash USB for USB access. You mount the pipewire or pulse audio socket at slash run slash user slash your user ID slash pipewire dash zero or the equivalent pulse path. X11 and Wayland sockets are mounted for GUI apps. The container doesn't own any of this hardware. It's just a tenant with a very permissive lease agreement.
The subletting model of hardware access. Which brings us to the third killer use case, isolating messy build environments. I have lived through the dependency hell of installing 50 development libraries for one project, then discovering they conflict with another project's requirements, then spending an afternoon untangling shared libraries like I'm defusing a bomb made of symlinks.
That's where DistroBox shines. You create one container per project. DistroBox create dash dash name project underscore alpha dash dash image Ubuntu colon 24.04. You install all the build dependencies inside. The host system stays pristine. When the project is done, DistroBox rm project underscore alpha and everything is gone. No orphaned packages, no conflicting library versions, no mysterious breakage 3 months later when you try to compile something else.
It's like adopting a feral cat. You get the companionship, but when it claws up your furniture, you can just unadopt it. No permanent damage to the house.
That metaphor took a turn I wasn't expecting, but yes. And this extends to the fourth use case, trying a different distro without dual booting. You're on Debian stable, but you want to test whether your software builds correctly on the latest Ubuntu with a newer Gleepsuck. You spin up an Ubuntu 24.04 container. It takes 2 seconds. You test, you verify, you tear it down. No rebooting, no partitioning, no grub configuration.
The fifth one, running old or future software with mismatched Gleebeek. That's the one that saves you from the it compiled on my machine problem that has haunted Linux development since the beginning.
You need to run a legacy application that requires CentOS 7 libraries. Create a CentOS 7 DistroBox container. The application runs in its native environment, but it can still read and write files in your home directory. Conversely, you want to test against Fedora Rawhide to see if your code works with the latest glibc and kernel headers. Spin up a Rawhide container. It's a time machine for dependencies.
We've covered what it is and what it does, but I want to circle back to something you said earlier about the init script, because I think the system integration deserves more attention. You mentioned that DistroBox init can run systemd inside the container if the image supports it. That's a big deal for a container, isn't it?
It is, and it's one of the things that makes DistroBox feel like a real workstation rather than a constrained environment. Standard Docker containers typically run a single process. You don't run systemd inside them because Docker's philosophy is one process per container. But DistroBox uses images like the Fedora Toolbox images that are designed to support systemd. When you enter the container, systemd is running. You can start /etcd. You can run cron jobs. You can have multiple services cooperating inside the container. It behaves like a full Linux system.
Which means you could, in theory, run a development server inside a DistroBox container, with system managing the services, and access it from your host as if it were running natively, all without touching your host's init system.
And this is where the comparison with plain Docker or Podman becomes stark. Docker is built around the idea that a container is a wrapper around a single application. You write a Docker file, you specify an entry point, the container runs that one thing and exits when it's done. DistroBox flips that model. The container is a persistent environment. You enter it, you run multiple commands, you install packages interactively, you leave it running in the background. It's the difference between a function call and a login shell.
The container as a home, not as a transaction. Which leads to the comparison with full virtual machines, because that's the other tool people reach for when they need a different Linux environment. What do you give up by using DistroBox instead of KVM?
The big one is kernel isolation. DistroBox containers share the host kernel. That means you cannot run a different kernel version inside the container. You cannot load kernel modules. You cannot use a different init system if the image doesn't support systemd and you need something specific. And the security boundary is weaker. If there's a kernel exploit, a process inside the container could theoretically escape and compromise the host. A VM has a much stronger security boundary because it's running its own kernel in a separate address space.
If you're doing kernel development, or you need to test a kernel module, or you're running untrusted code that you genuinely don't want touching your host, a VM is still the right tool. DistroBox is for when you trust the software but don't trust its dependency graph.
That's a good way to frame it, and the trade-off you get in return is performance. A DistroBox container has near-zero overhead. CPU performance is native. GPU performance is native because the container is just making syscalls to the host kernel's already loaded drivers. Disk ISO goes through the same file system. A VM has to emulate hardware, run a separate kernel, manage its own page tables. The overhead is significant.
You mentioned 50 megabytes of RAM for a container versus 1 to 2 gigabytes for a VM. That's not a rounding error. That's the difference between running 10 environments simultaneously on a laptop and running 2.
Under 2 seconds versus 30 plus seconds. It changes how you use the tool. With a VM, you tend to spin it up, use it for a while, and shut it down because it's a commitment. With DistroBox, you create a container, do one thing, and leave it running because who cares? It's consuming almost nothing. You accumulate containers the way you accumulate browser tabs.
The browser tab model of system administration. This is going to end well.
It actually does end well because DistroBox gives you the DistroBox list command to see what's running and DistroBox stop to pause things you're not using. But you're right that the low overhead changes behavior. It lowers the barrier to experimentation.
Let's talk about TubiX, because you can't discuss DistroBox without acknowledging Fedora's similar tool. TubiX is the default on Fedora Silverblue. How do they differ?
TubiX was created by the Fedora team and serves a similar purpose. It creates rootless Podman containers with your home directory mounted and is designed for development on immutable systems. But TubiX is more opinionated. It uses specific images, mostly Fedora-based, and has a simpler command line interface. DistroBox is more flexible. It supports any OCI image from any registry. You can run Arch, Ubuntu, Debian, Alpine, OpenSUC, whatever you want. DistroBox also gives you more configuration options, like the --- additional flags we mentioned for GPU pass-through, and it has better support for exporting applications and services from the container to the host.
ToolBX is the curated experience. DistroBox is the I know what I'm doing, give me the controls experience.
And they both use the same underlying technology, so the choice is really about whether you want a guided path or maximum flexibility. If you're on Silverblue and you just need a Fedora development environment, ToolBX is great. If you want to run Arch's AUR or Ubuntu's apt on your Fedora machine, you need DistroBox.
When should someone actually use DistroBox? Let's get practical.
First, if you're on an immutable distro like Fedora Silverblue, OpenSUSE Micro OS, or Vanilla OS, DistroBox is essentially the easiest way to get a traditional package manager and development environment without breaking the host's immutability. You get the best of both worlds, a stable, unbreakable base system, and the flexibility to install anything you need.
Second, for project isolation, one container per project, install your build dependencies inside. When the project ends, delete the container. Your host stays clean, and you never have to wonder whether that one library you installed 2 years ago is still needed.
Third, for GPU accelerated workloads on immutable systems, use the --- additional flags option to pass through GPU devices. DistroBox create --- name, CUDA --- image, NVIDIA/CUDA:12.4-devil---- additional flags --- GPUs all. Now you have a full CUDA development environment without modifying your host.
Fourth, for the I want to try this distro but I don't want to commit use case, spin up an Ubuntu container on Debian. Spin up an Arch container on Fedora. It's 2 seconds and zero commitment. You can even run GUI apps from the container. Install a browser, an IDE, whatever you want. They appear as native windows on your desktop.
The export feature is worth mentioning there. You can run DistroBox export --- app Firefox from inside the container, and it creates a .desktop file on your host. Firefox appears in your host's application launcher. You click it, and it runs from inside the container seamlessly. Most users would never know it's not a native application.
That's the part that still feels like a magic trick to me. You're running an application from a different distribution's user land, and it just... the window appears, the audio plays, the file saved to your home directory. The illusion is complete.
It's not really an illusion. It's just Linux namespaces doing what they were designed to do. The container isn't emulating anything. The processes inside the container are real processes on the host kernel. They're just in a different namespace with a different root file system. The kernel doesn't care that the binary came from Ubuntu's glibc and the host is running Fedora's. It just executes the code.
Which brings us to the limitations, because I think it's important to be honest about what DistroBox cannot do. You already mentioned no kernel modules and no different kernel version.
No different init system. If the container image doesn't support systemd, you're not getting systemd. Some images use OpenRC or Runit or whatever, and DistroBox can work with those. But the deep systemd integration that makes it feel like a full workstation depends on the image supporting it. I said this before, but it bears repeating, containers share the host kernel. If you're running untrusted code, a VM is the right choice. DistroBox is for trusted workloads where you want isolation from dependency chaos, not isolation from malicious actors.
There's a subtle one that trips people up. File permission weirdness. Because the container uses the host's user namespace, files you create inside the container are owned by your host user. That's usually what you want. But if the container's internal user ID mapping gets confused, you can end up with files owned by nobody, or by a different user ID than you expected.
That's mostly a configuration issue, and DistroBox handles it well by default, but it's worth being aware of. If you're doing something exotic with multiple users inside the container, you might run into edge cases. For the standard single-user development workflow, it's seamless.
Let's zoom out for a moment. DistroBox gained traction around 2021-2022, and it's now widely used on immutable distros. What does its popularity tell us about where Linux is heading?
I think it tells us that the traditional Linux distribution model, where you install everything into a single global/USR hierarchy and hope for the best, is slowly being replaced by a layered model. You have a thin, immutable base system that provides the kernel, the drivers, the display server, and the core utilities. Everything else runs in containers or sandboxes. DistroBox is the user-friendly face of that transition. It takes container technology, which was built for servers, and makes it work for desktops.
The thin kernel layer, future. Your operating system becomes a hypervisor for containers, and the concept of which distro am I running becomes almost meaningless because you're running five distros simultaneously, each in its own container, each specialized for a particular task.
We're already seeing this. Vanilla OS, which I mentioned earlier, is built around the idea that you run applications in containers by default. Fedora Silverblue treats the base system as something you don't modify. OpenSUSE Micro OS applies the same principle. DistroBox is the glue that makes this model practical for developers and power users who need flexibility.
If a listener wants to try this today, what's the quickest path from zero to I'm running Ubuntu on my Fedora machine?
Install Podman or Docker on your host. Podman is usually preferred because it's rootless by default and doesn't require a daemon running as root. Then install DistroBox from your distro's package manager. It's available in Fedora, Debian, Ubuntu, Arch, OpenSUSE, basically everywhere. Then run distrobox create --name ubuntu --image ubuntu :24.04, wait 2 seconds. Run distrobox, enter ubuntu. You are now in an Ubuntu shell with your home directory available. Run sudo apt update and install whatever you want. To run a GUI app, install it and launch it. It appears on your desktop.
If you want to get fancy with GPU pass-through, you add the --additional flags option with the appropriate device mounts. The DistroBox documentation has clear examples for NVIDIA and AMD.
The documentation is excellent, actually. Luca De Maio has put a lot of work into making it accessible. There are specific guides for GPU pass-through, for running specific applications, for integrating with different desktop environments. It's one of those projects where the documentation matches the quality of the tool.
That's rare enough to be worth mentioning. A tool that solves a real problem, with documentation that actually explains how to use it. The Linux ecosystem could use more of that.
And DistroBox is open source, actively maintained, and has a growing community. It's one of those tools that, once you start using it, you wonder how you lived without it. It's not doing anything technically revolutionary. It's just combining existing Linux kernel features in a way that's useful for real workflows.
The best kind of innovation. Not inventing something new, but connecting things that already exist in a way that makes people say, "Oh, of course." And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1713, Nicholas Bernoulli posed the St. Petersburg Paradox, a coin-flipping game with infinite expected payout. The paradox was that no rational person would pay more than about $20 to play it. Daniel Bernoulli resolved it by introducing the concept of diminishing marginal utility, essentially inventing the mathematical framework for why a guaranteed $100 feels different from a 1% chance at $10,000.
Expected value is in value. Good to know.
That explains a lot about lottery tickets.
DistroBox is more than a tool. It's a glimpse of where Linux is heading. The line between host and container is blurring, and that's probably a good thing. It means you get to stop worrying about which distro you installed, and start thinking about which user land you want for which task. The operating system becomes a substrate, not a commitment.
The open question is whether this becomes the default way to run development environments on Linux. As immutable distros gain traction, tools like DistroBox and ToolBX stop being optional add-ons and start being essential infrastructure. The container-native desktop is not a distant future. It's already here, and it works surprisingly well.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumintop. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show.
We'll be back next time with another weird prompt.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is is in your head. Send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird props, that's the close from sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird props, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.